Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Taxi! Taxi! Take me to the garden and hit the music.
Come on!
No fear, no shortcuts, always prepared. Madison Square, New York, we're here. All 5 boroughs, the love is thorough. New York forever, against whoever. God in the pink, see the orange, blue letters? Go against the Knicks, then you go against us. Now stand up and tell us where you're from. Come on! Say what? I can't hear you. What did I hear? Say what, y'all?
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today is Tuesday, June 9th. This is episode 237. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like, join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. You got some questions, you got some comments, leave it for us. We'll get back to you. We're going to go around the world of sports. We'll get it started. Game 3, Knicks Spurs last night. Spurs defeat the Knicks 115-111 at MSG. Victory snaps the Knicks 13-game playoff winning streak. Cuts the series lead to 2-1. Guys, we'll start it off there. Kev?
All right, I'm going to start off with the rational, sane approach. Everybody take a deep breath. Let's not overreact. It's one game. They just won 13 games in a row. They're not going to win every game, unfortunately. If you said before the series started, after game 3, they'd be up 2-1, you'd have taken it in a heartbeat. Let's put a break on any panic. Let's not overreact. Let's realize where they are. They're up 2-1. They played their worst game. They lost by 4 points. Their turnovers, especially, I mean, a lot of the turnovers are just plain sloppy, careless. It wasn't a lot of the San Antonio pressure and defense causing the turnovers. It was the Knicks doing it to themselves. And they had 13. Spurs had 8. The difference was the Spurs scored 21. The Knicks scored 7 off the turnovers. That was a huge difference. You know.
And listen, we wanted them to win out, but thought they were going to win out through the playoffs, let's take a breather.
Exactly.
They were going to get a loss somewhere, okay?
And, you know, they played terrible, like I said, the turnovers. I thought
Unforced turnovers. Just sloppy pass after sloppy pass.
Yep. It was, you know, a little too much, especially in the second half, too much Brunson ISO. I thought Cat, for the first time this series and the first time in, you know, probably in about 10 games that the offense felt like he didn't flow through Cat enough. Bridges all of a sudden was invisible last night. I think the two early fouls on him got him out of his rhythm a bit and affected him. It shouldn't have, but it did. And, you know, those two guys were not involved enough. OG picked up the slack. They had some other guys. Hart played a really good game. Clarkson off the bench. Wow, what a lift he had from out of nowhere. And, you know, Spurs defense was very physical. And I think that affected, you know, some of the offense getting stagnant in the third and fourth quarter. All right, they lost. Darren, what do you think?
I mean, listen, the officiating we'll get into in a second.
I say that.
Shamet had his worst game that we've seen in the entire playoffs. He couldn't hit water from a boat. He hit the 1-3. You know, Brunson was really good, actually. A couple of times in the fourth quarter, he got caught dribbling a little too much, and I get that. But nobody complains when he hits the shots. They just complain when they don't score. So you can't have it both ways. This is what this guy does. You know, it's hard to critique it. Yeah, Cat never seemed like he was in rhythm at all in this game. And even when he had the ball on the perimeter, it didn't seem like he ever had an open look for three. It's almost like they picked him up a little further out in this game, and he didn't really have a response. He only really did anything offensively when Cornett was on him. He took advantage of those couple of minutes. And by the way, I mean, you know, Hart pushing Cornett after getting knocked out. I mean, there were so many weird things that went on in this game. Even when Mike Brown's complaining about the officiating, which he does not do, you know it's a little bit off. And what was it, 22 foul shots to 8 in the second half?
24-8. 24-8. And then some of that from Brown is going to be gamesmanship too.
No, it is. But listen, Brunson gets a flagrant on his, but Castle, who runs through him, doesn't get one. Wemby crushes Brunson, no call. But if you breathe on Wemby, it's a foul. This is how I turned off of the NBA in 2002, guys. I'm just being honest. The officiating made me stop enjoying the NBA. Last night reminded me of why I don't like the sport sometimes. Kev?
I mean, everybody on the Spurs side, Brunson was holding Wemby's jersey. Wemby was just getting them off. Did we see game one where they had that blatant drive, the jerseys being pulled? How many times has Brunson been held the first three games? It's not like, watch the whole game. Everybody's holding everybody and holding jerseys. Nobody else is pushing somebody in the back of the neck. Wemby did to Brunson. I mean, come on.
No, that's but if they call it on him, he's out for a game because he got the flagrant already against Minnesota. So they ain't going to call anything on Wemby because he's the star. He's the meal ticket of the series, G.
Yeah.
All right. So Spurs have a fast start. It's 33-22 after the first quarter. Knicks have a great second quarter. They come out in the third quarter, and the first 4 minutes are a disaster for the Knicks. And then we get into this mentality again where all hell has to break loose, I feel like, for them to get back into this game. And then all of a sudden they calm down again, and then they get back into the game. And I feel like we go through this once a game somewhere. Somewhere along the line, we go through this every game with this team. The thing with this team is San Antonio gets crazy hot in that first half. There is a 10-minute stretch where they don't miss a damn shot. They're shooting 64% all of a sudden. Castle can't miss, and Vassell can't miss, and everybody's just on fire. And then all of a sudden, everybody gets back to their original scoring, and everybody is missing shots. Last night, the Knicks couldn't answer. There were parts where they couldn't answer, and that was the end. The officiating hasn't been good for three straight games. Last night, there were some really bad calls. I thought last night there were some really bad calls, but you know what? There haven't been good calls in the first three games. And I got news for you. The charge that Brunson tried to get away with taking, yes, it should have been a charge. But on the other side, you know, if you're going to exaggerate the call to some degree, he almost freaking killed himself when he fell backwards and hit his head on the, you know, it's like
Castle's bigger and stronger. He ran him over.
I mean, it's like, I get it, but at the same time, it's like, you got to just ease up a little bit. But listen, they're down 2-1. That's all it is. I mean, they're up 2-1. Excuse me. They're up 2-1. That's all it is. Game four now becomes important.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's death or death because it's important and that's all it is. For the Spurs, it's death because you go down 3-1, you got a problem. But
to a home.
Exactly. Yeah, but still you gotta win out at that point. Darren?
Yeah, the one thing I'll say is as much as we talk about officiating or whatever it is, Castle was great last night.
Oh, absolutely.
And he hit a huge three.
He did.
And then Fox hit a huge shot, and that's why they lost the game. They just absolutely didn't get the stops. And Fox did it against Anunoby, which is not an easy task because Anunoby is the Knicks' best defensive player and sometimes – but not sometimes, usually the best, most efficient offensive player. So the Spurs hit the shots they needed to do to keep the Knicks back. And that's what they did. Like you said, the two early fouls on Bridges just took him out of the rhythm. And he was not the factor. Hart did hit early. Hart, if he doesn't have his feet set, has no shot of hitting it. You almost feel like saying, please don't shoot it when your feet aren't set. You got no shot. There's no chance. There's not, unless it's going to be something that hits off the rim and goes up 20 feet in the air and falls in. There's no shot. And Clarkson, give him credit for the rust. They've been benching the guy, not giving him any minutes. Came in and played really, really well last night and tried to keep them around because Shamet was off last night. So a lot of things to see, but I thought the Spurs found a way to actually win the game at the end. It wasn't that the Knicks completely gave it away. The Spurs hit some big shots to win it.
They outscored the Knicks 21-7 on turnovers last night. That's a big difference on turnovers. That needs to change right off the bat. So, but game four.
For the first time, honestly, and for the first time at the end of the third, early fourth quarter, when they went to the bench, the Knicks didn't get the spark. First time in the whole series. We didn't see the Alvarado move.
Shamet.
A point in the first almost 4 minutes of the fourth quarter.
And Shamet wasn't good.
That had done stuff, and they didn't do it last night. That was the other point I wanted to bring up. I'm sorry,
Kevin. You know, I was going to say Mitch wasn't that good, but he played 7 minutes. I think a lot of it had to do with the fouls on the Knicks. You know, especially fourth quarter, they were in the Spurs were in the bonus 2 minutes into the fourth quarter on these foul calls that were like, what? You can't put Mitch into that. Well, that's right. The Knicks would be shooting. Never mind that one. But the Mitch did not play well.
No, but when they're behind, they really can't go to Mitch much because they need the offense, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. But the Knicks were never in the foul, were never in the bonus until under 2 minutes left in the quarter. How does that happen?
And with the physicality that was going on in the perimeter, there's some things that could be called. I have no problem if they're not going to call it either way. But, you know, you see some ticky-tacks going up against the Knicks. You want to see it almost evened out. I know we sound like homers, but if you watch that game, it didn't feel like there was a foul disparity in this game that was pretty blatant, then you're a Spurs fan or you have no idea what you're watching. Kevin?
For the game, Spurs took 34 threes, Knicks took 37. Mm-hmm. Points in the paint, Spurs 44, Knicks 46.
Yep.
How is the foul shooting 24-8 in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
When you look at those stats.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be.
If the Knicks shot 50 threes and the Spurs shot 10 threes, the Spurs probably have a 24-8 foul shot advantage. I would say yes. But not when it's even. Not when the points in the paint and the 3-point shots are equal.
I agree.
And then the other strange one was I think there was about 2 minutes left. The Knicks were trying to inbound. They inbound it.
That was stupid. Harper
comes on the court because he thought he was being subbed in. 5 or 6 seconds go off. Timeout. The referees call timeout. Clear everything up. Give the ball back to the Knicks. Well, Spurs had 6 men on the court. Harper comes off the bench as part of the play. Then they don't give the Knicks 6 seconds back. I mean, it was just like,
I know.
What? It was just a poorly officiated game. And all the sports, you can sit there and complain about officiating, umpiring, refereeing.
And we do.
But the NBA takes the freaking cake next to NFL, next to Major League Baseball, next to hockey. The NBA. And the inconsistency in this sport on officiating, and I'm not saying it's easy because these guys are incredible athletes and running up and down, but there's three. You're running from one base. You're not running baseline to baseline for anybody. Nobody is. And, you know, you'd like to see just a little bit more consistency, and you just don't feel like you get it in this sport.
Yeah, I mean, my last point is going to be echoing what Mike Brown said. Did we foul last night? Yes. But I'm sure the Spurs sure did foul enough, too.
Yeah, that wasn't called. So now we go back to game four, Gino, Wednesday night, right?
Wednesday night, Madison Square Garden. Knicks are a 2.5-point favorite at this point. Money line, Knicks minus 130. So Vegas still favoring the Knicks. Look, I think they're winning game four. I think they're finding a way to win game four. They wind up going up 3-1 and going back to San Antonio Saturday, and hopefully we get the job done.
Which one are you going to see? Here's an interesting stat I saw. Average distance shot to the rim. Game one, 17.3 feet. Game two, 15.2 feet. Game three, 10.6 feet. Less threes, more inside. Where the hell are you going to take advantage of 7 foot six?
They should be going there all night.
And we've seen it with Wemby throughout the entire playoffs. We said it several times on the podcast. What the hell is he doing outside so much? Yes, he can shoot from outside. It's nice to step out once in a while and take the three, loosens things up. You're 7 foot six. And last night was the first time in the finals that he used a lot more than 7 foot six on the offensive side.
And he gets every call. And he's a great foul shooter. I mean, there's a lot of variables with it.
Yeah.
Do you think part of that has to do with the other players hitting the outside shots? I mean, last night, Castle basically couldn't miss. Vassell was on fire half the game. Harper had a good game. Fox was shooting well. I mean, you know, there were games. I mean, game two, those guys were not hitting shots in the second half. There's no confidence going to one of those guys in the late in the third quarter for an outside shot. I'm not disagreeing with our comments.
I'm going to say it the other way, though. Are they hitting the shots because he's inside? Are they getting better looks because Wemby is giving them the spacing on the perimeter?
Hey, you may be right.
I don't know if I'm right, G, because I wasn't paying attention to it closely like you were.
You may be correct, though.
But that's usually why you want your big man in there, to give you the spacing. And then
that may be the correct way of looking at it, though.
It's just one of those things. But, yeah, listen, the Knicks, to be honest, I know it's not a must win, but to me it's kind of is. You can't get swept at home when you're 1-2 on the road to start. You got to find a way to get 3-1 in this series. You had a split here at worst. You know, you go back 2-2, the Knicks are no longer the favorite in this series if it goes back 2-2.
Yeah.
Now the Spurs, 2 out of 3 at home, even though the Knicks have won there, it's a big deal. And what the Knicks need to do is they need to get Bridges going early. They need to get Cat through the flow of the offense early.
So my only thing is, on a scale of 1 to 10, on the important scale, I will tell you this game is probably an 8. I can't tell you it's a 10. I think it's an 8.
Yeah, I don't think it's a 10 either, but I think it's an 8.
Okay.
It's at least an 8, yeah.
Before the series started, I talked about game one. I thought game one was a 12. Okay. That's how important I thought game one was. No, I'm being serious. That's how important I thought game one was. Before the series started, if I told you, you know, we were going back to San Antonio and it was 2-2, it wouldn't have mattered if I told you we held serve on the two games at home and lost the two games on the road. So but I do get you. And at this point, they need to get this win at home tomorrow night. I mean, they need to.
And this is a 10 game thing for San Antonio, by the way. The Spurs need it. The Spurs don't want to fall behind 3-1. Even with 2 of the next 3 at home, they've already lost twice at home. The Knicks aren't afraid to play in the Alamo Dome or whatever the hell they call it.
I agree. All right. Let's head. Darren, you had another NBA point.
Passing of Stacey King, who was a great collegiate player at Oklahoma and, you know, lost to Danny and the Miracles in the finals in 88. A good team with Chu Kennedy and Tim McAllister and Mookie Blaylock and Ricky Grace and all those guys. You know, we didn't know much about Stacey King as like a broadcaster or a local Chicagoan, but apparently this guy had a monster sense of humor. So there was a night where Jordan scored 69 points. And then when they asked him about it, he goes, did I ever tell you about the game where me and Jordan combined for 70? I love that story. It's one of my favorites. That's the kind of personality Stacey King had, 59 years old, way too young. Again, his pro career, I wouldn't call him a tweener, but he was like 6'9", 6'10". So he wasn't a true center, yet he wasn't a true physical power forward. So he kind of had a backup role in his career, but he was a hell of a collegiate player. And from what you hear, a hell of a guy. So, you know, rest in peace, Stacey King. You know, prayers to the family. That's all I had in the NBA.
Yep.
All right. We'll head over to the NHL. So game four being played as we speak right now. Vegas is up 3-2 right now. I'm sorry. Carolina's up 3 games, 3-2 at the moment. Vegas Knights leading the series 2-1. Ooh, this has been an extremely high-scoring, dramatic series. We've had 2 of the 3 games go to overtime. All three games have been decided by one goal. Kev?
Yeah. I mean, game one, we talked about last week, Vegas rallied from 2-0 down to win 5-4. Game two, Carolina rallied from 2-0 down halfway through the third. Score three unanswered. They scored two to make it 2-2. Stahl scored on the power play after Tortorella challenged a goal that was waved off due to goalie interference. Officials said, yes, there was goalie interference, got the penalty. But then Stone ties it on the power play, or just after the power play ended on the penalty by Blake. 3-3, go to overtime, and then...
Minute 21 left on that goal by Stone. It was late. Carolina had that thing under control.
And then Jarvis, 3:56 into overtime after the hurdle tripping call, wins it for Carolina. So they rallied. Game three, my goodness.
It was a great game.
Crazy.
Unbelievable stuff, man.
Scoreless first. Carolina put, Vegas put six goals into the net, actually.
First two were disallowed.
First two disallowed. One on an offsides, one on the goalie interference. Both legit overturns on video replay. No doubt about it.
The goalie interference was the closest one. The offside was clear. But his guy pushed the guy into it. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? The defenseman pushed him. He had to call it.
Yep. So four goals did count. Three in a row by Marner. It was the fastest hat trick in Stanley Cup final history. One of them including off the defenseman, Sean Walker. So the known goal, basically. So 4-0 after two.
Off Carolina his stick. He actually tried to make a play on it. It wasn't like it hit him in the skate and he didn't see it. He put his stick out there and he beat Anderson clean.
Yep. So third period, they make the change to Bussey over Anderson. First time Bussey's played since April 14th when he played against the Islanders. Didn't show how long ago that was. He stops in the breakaway. He stops Marner on the penalty shot. Keeps it 4-0. And all of a sudden, 7 minutes into the period, here comes three goals in 39 seconds, the fastest three goals in Stanley Cup final history. Carolina pulls it to 4-3. And then they had the late power play due to the puck over the glass. They pull Bussey. They score on the 6-4. You know, that Especially one was crazy, crazy goal. I mean, you had the puck over the net. You had players being pushed into the net. There were like 10 players, I think, in the goal crease by the end of it. Yeah. I mean, just a crazy, crazy result there. Crazy play. Gets into double overtime, and Shea Theodore comes down, shoots one wide of the net, bounces off the back end board, right back out. As Bussey's trying to get back in position, it comes off the back of his skate and into the net. What a way to lose 5-4.
It has been, Kev, probably the best Stanley Cup final I've seen. I mean, right now we have another one-goal game now. And three one-goal games, the physicality's been there. The skill in scoring has been there. The fluke plays have been there. Yeah. The excitement has been there. And, you know, you're not sitting there saying, oh, at the beginning of the season, I hope I get to see Carolina-Vegas in the Stanley Cup final. And especially with – us in the New York area with the Knicks being so prevalent, this series is not getting the credit it's due.
No.
Because we've been so engaged with the Knicks. But listen, first little chink in the armor, so to speak, was Anderson getting pulled. I mean, one was an own goal, but, you know, Hart had somewhat, I guess, has outplayed Anderson a little bit in this series, in my opinion. Not that Bussey's been great either. I mean, tonight he's given up two goals on seven shots. So it's not like he's been lights out, but you knew they had to go back and start him tonight.
Yeah,
it's just been great hockey. These are the two hottest teams right now, arguably the two best teams going at it and playing an amazing, amazing series. And hard for me to imagine any of these games not being one goal games unless there's an empty netter, because that's how gripping the series has been.
I said five hard fought games. It's been hard fought for three.
I went seven, so I did think it was going to be a little bit more nip and tuck, but I can't say that I thought every game was going to be game one decided with 3:36 left, game two decided in overtime, game three decided in double overtime. What do we get tonight, triple overtime? They're going to keep going. I mean, this is just great hockey.
We know Carolina's in trouble tonight. They led 2-0 and 3-1.
Yeah, you know, that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing in this series.
But the one stat they did put up, Stahl scored again tonight. He scored each of the first four games of the Stanley Cup Finals. First guy to do that since some guy named Mike Bossy back in 1982. Scoring each of the first four Stanley Cup Final games.
And you don't consider Stahl to be the sniper that Bossy was, so it's a little interesting.
Yeah.
But no, again, amazing hockey. Amazing hockey. Yep.
One of the hockey points I saw Peter Laviolette got hired as the LA Kings coach today. So yes. I think it's the seventh or eighth stop already.
Seventh team.
He comes in. He's great the first year or two. I mean, he's sort of, it's kind of almost like a little Tortorella in him.
A lot of Tortorella.
And then they get tired of him.
The old Keenan set the groundwork for it. These guys all follow it along.
Yep.
The other point was Dylan Larkin, captain for the Red Wings, has requested a trade. Kid grew up in Michigan. It's kind of weird that he requested the trade. The three teams originally stated were Florida, Minnesota, or Vegas. Today I saw a rumor, but it's unconfirmed, that it could extend to Tampa Bay, Anaheim, and the New York Islanders. But we'll see if that's true. I only saw that in one source. I didn't see that anywhere else. But Dylan Larkin apparently has had enough of playing in Detroit, his hometown.
Wow. All right, move over to a little baseball. So before today, Yankees at 39-26, tied for the AL East lead.
They just won tonight, by the way. So 40-26. Cruz held them out.
Mets at 29-36 before today, 7-3 in their last 10. Yankees had a little bad news, and we started talking about it last week, but we didn't have all of the facts in front of us. So Judge sent to the IL. He has a stress fracture in his upper right rib, will require at least 4 to 6 weeks. So it's 4 to 6 weeks before being reevaluated.
Yep.
Then you have to add another 2 to 4 weeks on top of that for baseball activities and minor league rehab games. In all likelihood, Judge is looking at the longer end of those ranges, so 6 weeks, 4 weeks, 10 weeks. So we're looking at best case Friday, August 14th, best case.
We'll see him in September.
And that's what I probably figure out also, is probably September 1st is probably a good time.
Well, what this does now we get an extended look at Spencer Jones. That's really what it all is. That's the only highlight of this. Until
Dominguez is ready.
Well, Dominguez gets healthy, it'd be great. I mean, I'd love to see him more of him as well. Well,
if you were ever going to give Dominguez a full solid month to play, here it is. This is it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do agree. Listen, the Yankees, the pitching being good, should keep this team around if the pitching stays good. The offense, you look at the lineup, and there's, glaring holes when you don't have Judge or Stanton in there at the same time. And, there's just not that guy you're scared of. Ben Rice has not hit since Judge has been kind of down much, with good reason. He's not seeing the same pitches he was seeing beforehand. The guy that's been hitting, by the way, has been Goldschmidt.
Absolutely.
I mean, every time up in a big spot, he finds a way to get a hit. Righty or lefty, it doesn't matter. They stop platooning him, saying, wow, he's a professional hitter. Let's let him play. McMahon's up like over 210 now. That's exciting. I mean, Bellinger does his thing, but they're going to be straight. Tonight they won on a two-run homer by Jones and a solo homer by Chisholm. That's how they won tonight. They're not going to score a lot of runs, which Kevin can relate to on the other side in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
But if the pitching keeps them in these games, Bednar seems to have found a little bit of a groove. So has Cruz. Let's see if that holds for a bit, because we haven't seen consistency from the pen. Again, we're in early June baseball. Long way to go. G?
Austin Wells put on the IL. So they called up Ali Sanchez to play with J.C. Escarra. They're going to need to get a catcher, Darren.
No, you've been talking about that for a couple weeks now. Yeah, there's no doubt.
I think you should get used to seeing Volpe, McMahon, and your friend, Caballero playing short and third because they're going to need to go get a catcher. And I think that's the player they're going to need to obtain at the before the deadline or at the deadline, because if Wells is not coming back for a while, and even when he was here was not showing any kind of offensive ability this year at all.
He hit the occasional solo home run. Come on, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and you know what? If we knew he was going to hit 25 home runs, I could deal with it, but he was not showing anything. Escarra and Ali Sanchez don't look like they're going to do anything. You're going to need to go get some kind of catcher in here.
I don't know how much he's worked beyond the plate recently, but Ben Rice, he came up. He was only catching, what, a year ago?
All indication is they do not want to put him back there for any kind of extension of time.
Understood, but
I get your point, Kev, but they want him to be the first baseman in the future. It's stupid.
And I got news for you.
Sometimes you like the team. I'm talking twice a week.
I like the way Goldschmidt is playing right now, but the only reason that he's playing first is because Stanton's on the DL on the IL. Because if he was back, Rice would be at first base and Goldschmidt wouldn't be playing.
Yeah.
So you know, I like the way Spencer Jones finally got around on one today, but you know, this is the time to bring Dominguez up as soon as he's healthy. You got to play him and give him the month. Give him the solid 30 days and let him play now that you know you don't have Judge for at least a month and a half, 2 months.
It's there's definitely things that this team needs to do. The catcher being the biggest – it's a bigger void right now than the relief pitching.
It is.
And the relief pitching, no matter what you say, still not very good. I could sit there and try to build off of Cruz and Bednar having a couple of good outings in a row, but we need a little bit more than that. But the catcher position, I mean, listen, we saw it last year. The Padres went out and got Fermin, right? And now he's hitting like 147 or whatever he's hitting. But last year he was like
– runs on the Mets.
Well, the funny thing is I've never seen so many solid hitters 2 months into the season hitting below 200. Was Machado hitting like 167? Yeah. Bregman hitting like 175. I mean, you're seeing like real guys that are hitters that can't get a hit. It's like all of a sudden, they've done something where professional hitters are falling apart. Kev,
I thought the shift was supposed to let everybody go back to hitting normal averages.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Well, it is. It's not those guys.
Yeah, it's not those guys.
Kev, want to talk about the Mets for a little bit?
I'll start the positives. Carson Bench off the 5 for 5, up to 265. AJ Ewing, boy, can he go get him in center field. And he hasn't been playing out there that long. He's been terrific out there. A couple more hits today. No, he's up to 270. Does Ewing remind you a little bit of rookie year Lenny Dykstra? With the way they go out and really, lay it out.
I was watching him. I was thinking Brett Butler, but I could go with young Lenny.
I was thinking the Matt.
Yeah, no, I get it. But when I watched him, the first guy that came to my mind was Brett Butler with the way he played. But yeah. I could see that argument pretty easily, though, right there.
Yeah.
You know what this Met team could use? A power hitting first baseman. Oh,
yes, they could. Shut up.
Well, I think it's great the way it went.
Yeah. The negatives. Again, looking at some of these advanced stats, what was it saying during the offseason? Run prevention?
Yeah, yeah.
The Mets are at -4 fielding run value on defense, ranked 21st in the league.
I still think Stearns is the smartest guy in baseball. I'm sorry.
Let's fire all the coaches besides Mendoza. Remember how good Antoine Richardson was at first base coach and how he had them stealing and running? -3 run value, base running, 26th in the major leagues. And the kicker, -45 batting run value, which is dead last. You know how bad it's been? The Padres are next to last, -29 run batting value. 16 runs worse. The Padres. And Darren, I'm sorry to say, I mean, the Padres, you look
good. They can't hit for shit. I mean, they're an awful offensive team.
Machado, Merrill, I mean, you got guys that are good players.
Tatis has one homer. You know, this team, they don't hit. By the way, Vegas ties it up, by the way, 3-3.
And the only other stat here, Juan Soto, 1.7 WAR by Fangraphs. The rest of the Mets qualified players have combined for a 1.0 WAR. Yeah, this is some team for $350 million. Now, let me ask you what you would do. So you've got coming off this week, you had off last Thursday, you had off Monday. So you've got a chance to reset your pitching. Three against the Cardinals, three against the Braves.
Yep.
Okay. You've got three starters, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're lining them up. You've got Peralta tonight. Five innings Friday. He did go six, but gave up six runs. Then you got Scott and McClain. So that you open up Friday and Saturday, you've got some combination of Manaea and Peterson and openers to go against the Braves. Don't you do one of those games at least on against the Cardinals and save one real starter for Friday or Saturday?
I do. It's the freaking Braves. I mean, it's your rival. You do it.
With 2 days off the last week, you've got a chance to sort of reset things a little bit.
Figure it out. But this is the Braves. This is your division. Listen, unless you are actually going to sit there and tell me on June 9th that you think the season's over, which we might feel that way, but the fact is that these players shouldn't be quitting right now. You got to catch the Braves.
Yeah.
You don't have any choice. You have to throw your starters out there, especially when you have the days off following up. It's a joke. I just don't understand I don't understand the strategy of baseball. And obviously, listen, I know Gino gets the strategy better than I do, so I acquiesce to him on this knowledge. I mean that sincerely. I'm not meaning that funny. But the fact is that everything we were taught to believe in baseball has gone like a 180. And it's like trying to figure it out and trying to agree with it is so hard, man. I don't know.
Well, I guess
like throwing pitches.
I guess you don't like the question I was going to ask Kev, which is which Mets he thinks could be gone by the trade deadline.
The most likely guys, you've got to look at the two lefty relievers there, especially Raley. Mitch's looked okay since coming back too. So, a couple of lefty relievers are going to be valuable. On the offensive side, who can they trade?
Who
the
can
you want to get rid of?
Yeah, who wants them though is the question. That's Kev's question, who wants them? Gino's saying everybody's open, except for Ewing, except for obviously Soto.
Ewing and Bench are your keepers. Soto, you can't trade with a contract. Lindor?
Who's going to take him?
Polanco? Bichette?
Have you seen Polanco yet? Because I really haven't.
Bichette.
Semien's starting to hit a little bit, to be perfectly honest. He could become serviceable to somebody because Bichette, if he continues to keep the power going. But Bichette's a big contract. Million. He's a big contract with a guy that gets hurt a lot.
Yeah, he's got an out, right? He's got an out after year one.
Yeah, but if he sucks,
He's gonna keep that money. He's gonna
keep the $46 million for next year.
I would keep it.
I mean, like I said, I understand your point. I would be looking to see who can you trade.
Wait. I don't have a point. It was just a question.
Oh.
I don't have any point.
Kevin, if somebody comes in and offers you out something for Alvarez, are you willing to give up on the 23-year-old or 24-year-old catcher?
If it's good enough, yeah. I'm not saying you have to blow me away, but
He hasn't done anything, so
he hasn't done
anything. He's not going to get great. He hasn't done anything in 2 years.
No, that's the problem. Yeah. And
but he's 24, and you got to like him. I kind of like him. I wish I had him.
This will never happen. I know this will never happen. This will never happen.
That's why I brought it up, Gino. This is why I brought it up.
Well, listen, this will never happen, but it's Alvarez and Brett Beatty. And it's three minor league pitchers.
You can get a major league pitcher for that.
I believe you can also.
Like the Yankee Met trade wouldn't happen. Would you consider Will Warren a guy that you would want? Probably not. But would you consider Heald to be a guy that you would look at?
Yeah,
that's actually a very good one, Darren.
Yeah, because Warren's not as sexy. Heald has an upside. And he's like slightly an elder statesman against, you know, McLean. Tong already got sent back down. I do think Tong will eventually be a pitcher here. I just think he's still a little young.
Yep.
McLean had a couple of tough starts, but he seems to have refound himself.
It's very rare that I can find a fit very easily with these two teams, but I can.
That's the fit I was thinking right away. I was like, Warren's nice, but he kills the upside.
And listen, I went Beatty, but it could be Simeon very easily.
Well, with Simeon, though, I mean, if you're talking about the Yankees, they're not moving Chisholm. And Simeon's never really played anything but second. They don't really move him around much anymore. He's gotten old.
Yeah.
He can't walk. He can't go from the dugout to third. It's too far. He can only go to second, Kevin.
I know. I'm just
Polanco. They hold hands out there.
Well, I listen, I know, but the four infielders that I'll mention quickly right now, and it won't happen. I know it won't happen, obviously, but Simeon, Bichette, Vientos, or Beatty. And if you were trying to dump any of the big contracts, that's the way to do it. It won't happen. I know it won't happen. One of those in Alvarez could definitely get you a couple of Yankee prospects. It won't happen, but that's the easy one.
It's actually not a bad – this is actually a very fair trade, I think.
The funny thing about it is that I really thought – Gino was the one that was against it. You and I both thought Vientos was going to take this next step. Gino was the one. No, sucks. Gino called it. I didn't like Beatty. I like Vientos. I think Kev liked both of them somewhat, but maybe a little bit with the rose colored. Gino was very anti with the Vientos right away. You didn't hate him, but you were like, he's not going to be that good.
I thought at 24 he was going to be good.
I do think Vientos needs a change of scenery in the worst way, though. I do think that. I do think he needs a change of scenery. He could be a DH somewhere. He's a butcher in the field.
He's a butcher.
Not in New York, though.
No.
Send him out Midwest somewhere.
Yeah.
All right.
Honestly, that's the kind of guy you trade to San Diego who needs offense, and you say, hey, here's something.
Any other baseball points before we move on?
I have a couple of little treasures for you guys, if that's all right. Alex Bregman, we talked about him for a second. So far this season has left 143 runners on base after signing a 5-year, $175 million contract.
That's almost $1 million per runner.
Jimmy Rollins, when we watched him, we thought he was a very good player. Maybe not a great player, but very good. But his 2007 sometimes gets overlooked. Only player in baseball history, guys. 20 triples, 30 homers, 40 stolen bases in a season.
Wow.
That's really freaking hard to do.
Yeah.
And trivia question for you boys. Who's the only pitcher in Major League Baseball history to strike out 200 or more in 9 consecutive seasons?
Ryan.
Nope. That would have been too easy.
Yeah.
Seaver Tom Terrific. Seaver did it from 68 to 76. And just one last point. I mean, those are my treasures. College Baseball World Series, very much of an SEC flair again. As we see Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Alabama, Texas, and Georgia all make it to the Final Eight with West Virginia, Troy first time there, West Virginia first time there also, and North Carolina. So we have the college baseball has been excellent, by the way. It really has. If you get a chance to watch these games, some really good stuff going on. And that's all I have for baseball, guys.
Couple of my gems are baseball related too, so I'll go right to there. So this is the Reds Padres game. Matt McClain against Jason Adam. Ball one. Umpire second pitch, strike. McClain, now I'm gonna challenge that. Overturned, ball two. Next pitch, strike. Now I'm gonna challenge that. Ball three. Next pitch, strike. McClain says, no, third straight challenge. Fourth ball, walk.
Unbelievable.
That's ABS for you. That was Lance Barrett behind the plate there.
I got to be honest, the challenge doesn't really bother me because it's quick.
No, it's very quick. I'm fine with it.
It's like watching the tennis challenge.
And you're allowed two mistakes.
At the open. It's like, boom, 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 the ball's in, ball's out, strike, ball, boom, done.
Yep. Craziest game of the week. First game in Las Vegas. They play in the minor league park out there. No wonder you see the PCL stats always inflated. Milwaukee 15, Athletics 14. 12 innings, 4 runs for each in the 10th inning. They combined for 11 home runs. 4 hours and 14 minutes, longest game of the season so far. 16 ABS challenges in the game.
Oh, my God.
Clinton Vondrak had a great game behind the plate there. But the interesting thing is 15-14 final, the only other 15-14 game in the last 25 years, Brewers won at the Nationals 15-14.
That's great.
And one minor league point here. The Oklahoma City Comets played the Round Rock Express. So Round Rock had a run right first with one out. Shallow fly ball to left field. Remember Jack Suwinski?
Of course. The great pirate.
Tries to make the sliding catch. He doesn't make the catch. Hits his glove, bounces straight up. The third baseman, who's going out to try to call for it possibly, he thinks quick. He catches it off his glove, popped up, catches it, throws the first double off the runner. Just a very common 7-5-3 double play.
Unbelievable.
I took a look. You do the AI research, you do this. I can't find another 7-5-3 double play.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. Wow. That's awesome.
And those are my couple of gems.
All right. Moving on. So this past Saturday, we had the 158th running of the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga. So the Kentucky Derby winner come up with the victory to win two legs of the Triple Crown, Golden Tempo. Darren?
Yeah. I mean, listen, Sherry DeVoe, Jose Ortiz, and Golden Tempo find a way. Listen, the funny part about this is, we talked about this race last week. Power Shift came out, took the lead like expected. Fractions were just about 24 at the quarter, a little over 48 at the half. You know, doing everything you can to make sure that the closers wouldn't have much room. Power Shift finished dead last. Big move on the stretch, and it had to be about 7 wide. It was him, Renegade, and Commandment all coming down together. Chief Wallaby had just come by and passed, not Otino. It was the other horse. I'm blanking on who he passed in the stretch. And all of a sudden, these three horses came flying by, and Golden Tempo just had another gear. Yeah. It was almost like watching Sovereignty a bit last year and the way he just kind of pulled away. Because, watching this, and Kev's a Renegade guy, Holy Cross High School, Rapoli, the whole thing. I was rooting for Renegade as well. I had money on both. I did hit the exacta, but it wasn't like I had it much bigger with the four on top. Just watching Golden Tempo just kind of put into that extra gear was amazing. And listen, you get the exacta with the Derby winner, 9-7, $111. I thought Commandment ran a hell of a race, finishing second with that move. The triple was less than the exacta. The $1 triple was 102. Mm-hmm. The $2 exacta was 111 and change. And the $1 superfecta paid $2,379. I did not have those. I did have the exacta, but it was
I should have played the super. The four horses they gave you last week. If you boxed them for $24, I would have won $1,000 or $2,000.
You would have won 2000.
It was 2000 for the dollar, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
$2,000. Damn.
I have the dollar superfecta paying $237.98.
Yeah, I have that too.
10 cent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the dollar paid $2,379.
Okay.
Yep. But they got to figure out horse racing a way to have horse have to mandatorily run all three of the Triple Crown, because we don't know how great Golden Tempo is. He didn't run the Preakness.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get to be compared to the others. So you have to figure out a way to space out the races more and encourage everybody to run a little bit more, I think. I know that it was always been, the three races over 5 weeks, but nobody wants to do it anymore.
It's weird. Saying that he won two legs of the Triple Crown is so weird. Because he didn't run all three, it's so weird. And I hope that they find a way to bring a little bit of the juice back, because I watched it. I didn't feel like there was the juice that it used to have. Maybe it'll have that juice when it comes back to Belmont track. Maybe, because it was in Saratoga, but I don't know. It just Didn't feel like it had the same juice that it used to, you know?
Well, I mean, listen, there's no Triple Crown being run for, and that takes the juice away.
Yeah.
And you know what? Everybody, listen, by the fact that the Derby winner goes off at 6-1 tells you that nobody thought he was the legit winner and everybody thought it was a fluke. For him coming back in this race, now we get the chance to see him at Saratoga over the summer, most likely. And then we'll see what happens at the Breeders, and we're going to see him two more times, and we'll see if he's for real or not. But, yeah, horse racing always has that black eye. They just don't know what the hell they're doing, just the way the sport is run. And that's pretty much it. And that we won't be really touching on much. We'll catch a race here or there at Saratoga, and we'll talk about the Breeders when it comes around in November when we're in full football mode and Gino's like, all right, hurry this up.
We'll talk about Travers Day, son.
Travers Day. Absolutely. The Travers will be big.
Okay. 2026.
French Open first, yeah, real quick, before you go to the French. We'll finish with the World Cup. So on the women's side, first-time Grand Slam winner, Mira Andreeva, 19 years old. The youngest French Open winner since Monica Seles in 92.
That's awesome.
On the other side, the men's side, first-time Grand Slam winner, Alexander Zverev. Finally gets it done at 29 years old. The fifth oldest ever to win his first Grand Slam. The last guys to do it, the ones we know, would be Ivan Ivanišević and Peter Korda.
Whose daughter won the Women's Open this week.
And I mentioned Peter Korda because his daughter won the Women's U.S. Open this past weekend. Yep.
That's awesome.
And that's my look at tennis.
One quick thing before we get to the World Cup. Brendan Sorsby, okay? So boys, help me make this make sense. You're Sorsby. You bet $100,000 on games that you've played in. You get a two-game suspension, but they allow you to play. To now to the point where there are schools that are trying to unschedule Texas Tech as a boycott. Texas making a big deal about this whole thing. But then we find Noah Shannon a few years back. Defensive lineman, University of Iowa. He made a $10 bet on a women's basketball game. One bet. Turned himself in. Got banned for the season, and his career was over. Please help me make this make sense. Because the fact that this guy's getting to play after betting $100,000 on games he played in is a travesty. Now, when you look it up, though, and they go through the circuit judge, he is a Texas Tech supporter. And the original judge, before he got put in there, was also on the Texas Tech Good Old Boy Network. This stuff can't happen. This is ridiculous. I mean, and listen, it's not the kids' fault. They're making gambling part of every single thing that we do now. Yep. And listen, guys our age, you know, guys in their 50s, we like it. It's fun. Boom, I can put a few bucks down here, a few bucks down there. I can bet this on my phone. I'm doing that. But what's a 20-year-old kid to think? It's not his fault, but there's no way the kid should be playing if he bet $100,000. Please, somebody tell me I'm wrong. I don't know. It's crazy.
You're wrong. No, I can't tell you.
You're not wrong, and I have no idea how to make sense of it, Darren.
It just doesn't make sense. Let's go to something that does make sense, G. Why don't you talk a little World Cup?
2026 FIFA World Cup. It's the historic turning point for the world's most popular sport. Tournament expands to a record-breaking 48 teams for the first time in history this year. Moves away from the traditional 32-team format, which has been in existence since 1998. Soccer fans across the globe are preparing for this unprecedented festival of sportsmanship. It's an inflated schedule of 104 total matches spanning over 39 days. This will be hosted by three different nations, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. Matches will be hosted across 16 iconic cities. It introduces 12 groups of four teams, bringing a wave of tactical adjustments and drama to the group stage. Under new guidelines, Kev, the top two teams from each group alongside the eight best third place finishers will advance.
Out of 12, by the way. Eight out of 12.
Yep.
A brand new high stakes round of 32 knockout phase. I'm tired of reading all this with heavyweights like France and Spain, defending champs like Argentina. We are set for a thrilling, unpredictable month of soccer. Let's talk about the U.S. Group D. Darren?
Here it is. When we look at the Americans are expected to do something this time, okay? Group D, they are the favorite, okay? They are the 16th ranked team in the world, Turkey being 22nd, Australia 27, the Socceroos, and then Paraguay is 40th. The thing about the Americans that most intrigues me was the decision in goal. They go to Freeze over Turner. I know Turner hadn't been in great form, but it's not like Matt Freeze has been lighting it up either. I thought Turner had played well in big tournaments in the past. That's probably the first thing I point out when I look at this American team. Because when you look at the overall skill level of the Americans, Kev, they're much better than they've been. The yep. skill level has increased to a level beyond. Pulisic is a world-class player. Bolu up front has been he had a great season. Tillman helps out up front a lot. Adams and McKennie are really good players. If Richards is healthy, solid in the back. Dest or Weah seems to be the biggest debate on who's going to get that start on that other side. Robinson getting his side. I mean, the starting 11 is almost completely set. Everything I've seen has Dest starting. I don't know if you've seen anything different. No. The things I worry about with the Yanks or the Stars and Stripes, whatever nickname you choose to use, is that can they keep focus? They give up these weird goals. They're not set on a set play. They do silly things, and that's what kind of sets them back. So their aggressiveness, skill, and speed are the strengths. Focus is the one thing I'd be concerned about. Kev, your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. You talk about the group. The U.S. is the only nation that is plus as a favorite and on the odds. I was looking at DraftKings.
Turkey's pretty good.
To win the group, you mean, right?
Yeah. In the group, yep. To win the group. And Australia, plus 800 on Benny line, was the worst. It was the best of the fourth teams in any group. So it would be a very difficult group. I think one of the things that you have to watch out for is in the midfield. Pochettino did not bring too many midfielders, and two of the big guys there, Tyler Adams, they only brought four.
Yep.
And they're playing, like a 4-3-4 type or that 4-3-3 type or something. Tyler Adams has dealt with a lot of injuries during the season this year. They have to be careful with that. They're relying on Christian Roldan, but he hasn't had a lot of experience at this level. Playing World Cup type teams, playing national teams, at this level. So I think, those are going to be two big guys. They have to make sure they, A, stay healthy, and, B, make sure, they don't accumulate yellow cards and wind up getting, accumulation where they have to miss a game because, they don't have the depth in the midfield. Outside of that, it's a really tough group, but, they're expected to get past the group stage. And especially if they win this group, that sets them up where they would have a favorable matchup round of 32 and at least get to the round of 16, which I think is the goal is to minimum to get to the round of 16.
Yeah, I think they got to get to the 8 this year to be successful, to call it a successful year, in my opinion. I do think they have to get to the 8 because it's home. I mean, you're home. Yes. You got to find a way. What was your thought on the goalie with Freeze getting all the starts basically over the last year, basically?
Yeah, like I said, I don't think he's been all that great, but, the fact that he's been playing is the reason why you have to go with him, I think.
Yeah,
It's hard to go with a guy who hasn't been playing that much for the national team.
I know, I get it. I just was surprised that he made that decision so quickly with all these other things. I thought, I like Matt Turner.
I would have been going with both of them in the lead up here and see who's going to be playing the best form over the last month and a half with the friendlies they've been playing. I mean, they've played, about 5 or 6 friendlies in the last month and a half or so. I would prefer to have seen Turner there a few times to see if he could get hot because we know what Turner can do.
Yeah, we've seen him play great in big spots.
Yeah.
So we'll see. G?
So I got 3 points on him. One is keeper could be an issue right off the top. Okay. Two is they're likely to defend 4. They're on the attack. They're going to highlight the strengths of the outside backs like Robinson and Dest. And they're going to depend on their key players like Pulisic and Florian to have to come up big, score these goals. We're going to hope that they're going to play their set pieces well.
Yeah.
And actually get a couple of goals on set pieces. They have not done well in the past on those set pieces. And I think if they get a couple of goals, that will help them get to the next round. I think they will get past, you know, the group stage here, but from 32 to 16, they're going to have to play well, and getting from 16 to 8, I think, is going to be, you know, that's a task.
Well, the thing about it is, like, their last friendly, they played Germany. They lost 2-1. They dominated that game. They gave up a goal in the third minute on a bad lapse during a set piece. Gave up a late goal too on a turnover. But the thing about it is they pretty much had Germany on their heels the entire game. And Germany was playing their players. So it wasn't that. So, you know, the skill set and the talent is there. I mean, Kev, you remember when we first started watching this team. Like, their big thing was to try to kick it down the field as far as they could. Hope McBride could head something in. There was no real skill set.
Where Kobe Jones tried to run it down.
Yeah, Kobe Jones running things down. You're sitting there, you know, maybe getting 35, 40% of possession on a good game. Now this is a team that should get control possession in all three of these matches that are in this group. They have to find a way, you know, they have to win the first two games. They got to get the 6 points. They got to be able to move on, and then we take it from there. But as we talk about this group, the exciting Group D, Kev, why don't you tell us a little bit about Turkey, who's probably the biggest.
Turkey's going to be the biggest challenge to them.
On paper, they are anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look. I mean, they've got some really good players up front there. Keenan Yıldız from Juventus. Mm-hmm. You've got Arda Güler from Real Madrid. Hakan Çalhanoğlu from Inter Milan. These guys are very creative. Like you said, Darren, Turkey is highly rated on FIFA. And this is going to be real, real challenging team for the U.S. to face here. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, would not shock me at all to see Turkey wind up winning this group. That's how good they are.
No, they're very good. They are, what, number 22 in the world, I think? I believe they're 22 on FIFA. I think they're 22.
Yeah, they're up there.
Gino, how are the Socceroos looking?
They're not the best team in this group. Let's put it that way. Sixth consecutive World Cup. They've only advanced to the round of 16 twice. They have a very young foundation on this team, so we'll see. They're led by midfielder Jackson Irvine, Watford forward Nestori Arakunda. He's only 20 years old. They got Norwich striker Moturi at 22, and Fenyuturo, his Jordan Buss is his name. He's 23 years old. So they're led by a lot of young players. I think the goalkeeper is going to be their big issue. We'll see how well they get between the defense and the keeper. I think that's where we're going to find out how well they do. As far as goal scoring, I think they'll put a couple of goals in the net, but you know, if they're going to give up 4 goals a game here, they're not going to advance. They are the highest out of the group as far as odds-wise to advance. So, Socceroos probably are not going to advance in this group. Darren, what do you think of the last team in this group? Paraguay.
Albiroja. Otherwise known as the red and white. They had a 40th team in FIFA, ranked team in FIFA. First World Cup since 2010, ninth overall. This is the, you know, this is the physical, nasty, grinded out, defensive, 10 guys behind the ball team. This is the way they're going to play. They're going to try to sit there and lull you to sleep and try to beat you with a long ball here and there. But let's be honest, this team is now in form. They have beaten Argentina and Brazil last time around against both of these squads, so they are playing much better. Their star is Miguel Almirón. He played 6 years in the Premier League at Newcastle. I mean, he's a player, okay? They got Diego Gomez. He's a huge offensive threat. Andres Cubas is a great defensive midfielder. He's quick. He's physical, does it all. And they got a kid named Julio Enciso. He's a young attacking midfielder, right? He's the future. He's 23 years old. He was hurt. They struggled. He came back. They're playing better. If he's able to play all the way through, you know, he could be a threat. The thing, unfortunately, for Paraguay is that really a success for them is to get to the round of 32. If they can get, they can find a way to finish third, maybe, you know, maybe be in the top eight of those 12 teams, they have a shot. But, you know, there's just not enough consistent talent around on Paraguay that I don't think that they're going to be that much of a threat. I think they'll be fighting Australia for the three, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, the thing just in general in this bracket, though, is that you look at the other groups, everybody's got like a patsy. Somebody that's got to be a guaranteed 2 points for the win, or 3 points, I should say, for the win. I don't think you have that here.
Paraguay is the weakest team on paper, and they're not that weak because they play in the South American League where they play Brazil and Argentina, and they beat them. And number two, they're also used to the time zone difference doesn't affect them. There's not a lot of travel for this team. They played in North America with CONCACAF. They understand, with all that stuff. They've played against these games. They've been in these stadiums. I think that they'll probably be as comfortable as they are at home.
And well, you know, let's face it, with the when you get some of the Hispanic population in these games, in the even the U.S. you know, you're going to get enough Hispanic population that's going to root for these Hispanic nations from South America, from, you know, including Mexico too in there, that they're going to feel at home in some of these matchups.
No doubt about it. Their crowd will travel.
Yes, they will.
Speaking of crowds that'll travel, Gino, let's talk about Group A. Mexico, South Korea, South Africa, and Czechia. You look at this group, and South Africa is 60th in the world. So you feel like that might be the patsy that you're talking about.
Yep.
Mexico, I think, disadvantage, Kevin. You can correct me if I'm wrong. They're playing all their games in Mexico. I think that there's more pressure playing there. I think they'd much rather play up here in the United States. And they don't own the crowd anyway. And yep. I think they'd have a little less pressure, just my opinion. But tell me your thoughts on Group A.
I think it's Mexico, obviously. They've got the home field. I think it's the home field. I think playing at altitude in Mexico is going to be a big difference. A lot of these other countries coming in are not used to playing at this altitude. It was funny. I think in some ways they may not have the overall talent like they have in the past, but I think they may be a better team right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they're an easy win in this group. And, you know, again, you know, get to the 16 and see what happens from there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, South Korea's got talent, all right? South Korea can – they got playmakers. They're 25 in the world. They got playmakers. They can score. Czechia, don't know if they're going to be able to do much on defense or offensively. They should be able to get a couple of goals in the net. But Mexico, South Korea look like the two definite advancers to me in this bracket.
Yep.
All right, Kev, we look at Group B.
Group
B. The Canadians are the host.
Yeah, the only group where
Bosnia Herzegovina. Come on, Kev, say it for me.
Bosnia Herzegovina.
Close. Qatar and Switzerland in this group, Kev. What are your thoughts on this one?
Surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly on paper, but Switzerland is favored, at least by DraftKings, over Canada. So Canada's the only home team that's not favored.
Switzerland 19 on FIFA rankings, Canada 30. Yeah. Actually, 19 is probably – I think it's the lowest of any bracket of the highest seed, 19.
Yeah, you've got a couple of brackets where there are a couple of highly rated teams in each bracket.
Including Group C, which we'll get to next.
Yeah, but you know, Qatar's not going to be much of a challenge for either one of them. Bosnia, you know, they're going to be that for third-place matchup. They might have a chance when you look at some of the other groups. They might have a chance to sneak in as one of those eight third-place teams. But, again, it should be Switzerland and Canada.
Yeah, I mean, Switzerland should be the favorite. Canada has never won, even scored a point in World Cup. They've lost all six matches they've played. So just something to keep in mind. Bosnia is 65, Qatar is 55. Technically, with FIFA rankings, Qatar is considered the favorite. Yeah. Group C, Kev, we got Brazil, Morocco, Haiti, and Scotland, with Haiti being the patsy you talked about.
Yep. Brazil, they had the late coaching change. Carlo Ancelotti took over. They've only played four games under him. They're going to play a lot of 4-2-4, which would be a lot of chaos. You know, they don't have that true number nine striker on this team. But with the 4-2-4, they're going to try to push the pace a little bit, I think. But it also leads them to maybe give up some on the back end. So, it's going to be a very interesting tactical game against Morocco. Because Morocco, they D it up. They play a very unique 4-1-4-1 formation that is very hard to penetrate. Problem is they don't necessarily score a lot. So they can get a couple of set pieces here and get some goals that way. They could steal a game against Brazil. You never know. But they're going to be very disciplined. And it's going to be an interesting battle between Brazil and Morocco.
Well, Brazil's not in form right now. They've struggled. The Neymar situation with his injuries back and forth has always been like a thing back and forth for this team all year. I just don't know if they're going to have enough defensively to kind of hold in there. Morocco, like you said, is that team that could be dangerous for them. Haiti hasn't played a home game since 2021 because of everything that's gone on in their country. Every game's been on the road. For them to qualify without playing a home game, good for them. Scotland has never gotten out of the group. This is a chance. Scotland has never gotten out of the group. So this is something to look at. Well, they're 43.
With Brazil ranked basically sixth in World Cup odds and Morocco at 12th, I'm not sure how easy it's going to be for them to get out of that group.
No, you can be third.
No, I know.
To
get those points, they're going to have to get some wins against those teams.
Well, the thing about it is their best shot is getting the tie against Morocco. That's really what they're trying to do. Yeah. Hope they can play to a 0-0, 1-1 tie. We touched on Group D already, Kev.
But we let's go to
Group B, where we get the Germans, Ecuador, Curacao, and the Ivory Coast.
Yeah, Germany's going to be the big favorite here. A lot of names are familiar, but I think the problem is that their top players, Wirtz, Musiala, and Ultimate, have all struggled with their clubs this year. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can find their form in the group stage of the tournament here. And if they can find their form over the next three games, they could go somewhere. Their goalie, Michael Neuer, is still around, 40 years old, but still in the nets for Germany.
Actually, he retired and came out of retirement for the World Cup.
Yeah. What do you think of the rest of the group, Darren? Anybody going to give Germany trouble?
Ecuador's got the talent. First and foremost, Curacao, smallest nation ever to qualify. Congratulations. They're a debutante, first time in. Ivory Coast has talent, but they don't have Drogba coming through like we remember from back in the day. They don't have the same striker. So to me, it's a two-team tournament here in this one between Germany and Ecuador. Ecuador is good. They've got talent. It's just I don't know if they're going to be able to – Germany's Germany for a reason. They always find a way to be very competitive in these tournaments. I think that's Germany-Ecuador when I look at Group E. Group F, Kev. The Dutch, the greatest country never to win one, they say. Japan, Sweden, and Tunisia.
Yeah, it's going to be a battle between the Netherlands and Japan. Netherlands is a favorite. They've got lots of defensive talent. Maybe not the best team up front. They're going to be steady with Van Dijk as the defense. This is a guy, he's a workhorse. He played every minute in the Premier League this year for first team. So, I mean, that's incredible to play every minute.
Van Dijk is a stud. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Netherlands is going to really rely on set pieces. And if you watch the UEFA, they kind of play a little bit like Arsenal. They'll play 11 behind the ball and challenge you to try to break through and try to counterattack and try to win on a set piece goal or two during the course of the match.
Yeah. The Japanese are a very exciting team. They play quickly. Little banged up, but they have so many skilled players, and they're fast, and they're an offensive-minded team. So the matchup between those two should be really interesting. Tunisia, because Gino knows this, was the first African country to ever get a win in the World Cup when they knocked off Mexico in 78. Gino was watching that, glued, sitting on his pop's lap watching that one because they used to show so much back in the day of all these other countries. Yep. Sweden, the interesting route here, okay? In original qualifying, they won zero games, yet they had a couple of ties, so they qualified for the playoffs. The only two wins they had were the two they had to get in here in the playoff in Europe. I've never seen that like that. Netherlands and Japan should be far head and shoulders above the other two, in my opinion. Not that Sweden can't win. They just, you know, I don't see what's the guy's name that they made the guy who was the superstar for years for them, for Sweden? Who was the striker that they made? They think a guy on Ted Lasso named after. Why can't I think of his name? Anyway, not that important. But we know Abramovich or something like that.
Zoran Abramovich.
Yeah, Zoran Abramovich. They don't have that striker right now, but we'll see what happens. Gino, only six more to go. Don't worry about it. Group G, Belgium, Egypt, Iran, New Zealand. And understand this. Iran is 21 in the world. Egypt is 29. Belgium is 9. New Zealand, 83. So that's the obvious out. Kev, thoughts? As Belgium never really got it done with that greatest generation, and now De Bruyne and company are older. And Lukaku, so now it's the young kids that have to come back up.
No, they still have the older stars playing, but, you know, they're all into their 30s. De Bruyne is almost 40, you know.
Yeah, the young kids are going to have to win it for them.
It's going to have to be the young kids, you know. Yeah, they're going to get their win against New Zealand. Egypt, you know, they've got Mohamed Salah. He's an absolute wild card out there. When Salah's on, not too many other players can score like he can.
But he's got a roommate with him that I'm forgetting his name too. They have two guys up front that can score, and I'm blanking on the other kid's name. But yeah, they're good.
And you know, so I think, you know, Iran. That's gonna be interesting having them come over to North America right now.
You feel bad for the soccer players because they have nothing to do with any of this crap.
Yeah. But again, you know, I hate to be a broken record here, but you know, Belgium, Egypt, because of the power there with the names. Iran, I think, has a good chance of getting through here. I think they can steal that third place seeds here.
Iran is actually technically higher seeded than Egypt, but they're also going to be the team that plays 10 behind the ball. Group H, Spain, the number two team overall, Cape Verde, Saudi Arabia, and Uruguay.
Yeah, Saudi and Cape Verde are bad.
Yeah, for about a month, Cape Verde was the smallest country to ever qualify for the World Cup until Curaçao took it away from them. So it was just one of those things. That's the biggest thing you can say about Cape Verde.
Yeah. I mean, for Spain, you know, the teenager Yamal, he's been banged up with a hamstring. They're hoping that, you know, he's held back in some of the friendlies here, leading up, trying to make sure he's in proper condition. Rodri really struggled. That's another one of the big guys. They did win Euro 2024, and really take a look, you know, in this group, they should win this group easily. And when you look at the way the bracket is set up, they may not have much in their way until the semifinals. They've got a pretty easy path the way it's set up right now, barring any major miracles here. They have a chance to get through some of the early things here, get Yamal healthy, and, you know, really make a run here and start playing their best as the tournament goes along.
Yeah, Uruguay would be the easy second place team here. They're very talented, but Spain should be going away here. Saudi Arabia and Cape Verde, I'd be surprised if either one really did much. Group I, probably the most talented team in the world. I don't root for the French, but they are the most talented team in the world. Senegal is really, really strong. Iraq, Norway. Thoughts?
Senegal might be good enough that they could be the top two in most other groups. This group, I think they're a clear third. You know, France, like I said, the talent, Mbappe, Dembele, Olise, Doué. You know, they've got stars galore. What's interesting is they don't press. They let the other team run their little ticky-tack passes and take some possession, but they still have to shoot the opponents 18-8 leading up to this World Cup. Norway, they've got the best scorer in the World Cup. Erling Haaland, 23 goals for Norway since 2024. That's 8 more than anybody else has playing for their national team. He's led the Premier League 3 of the last 4 years in scoring. He is the premier goal scorer in the world right now and gives them a puncher's chance. I think, you know, that's a group stage game I am looking forward to the most is France and Norway.
To be honest, Senegal higher ranked than Norway overall. And Senegal and Morocco apparently had the most ridiculous African championship matchup. There was a lot of controversy on this. Some people think Senegal won. Some people think Morocco won. I didn't watch the match, so I can't give you an opinion on it. Norway hasn't been there since 98, I believe. So it's a long trip for them. Senegal, number 14 in the world. They're ranked higher than the U.S. right now.
Yep.
Iraq is probably that patsy you talked about. Group J, we have the mighty Argentinians, the returning champs, Algeria, Austria, and Jordan. I have a little information for us on Argentina if you guys are up for it.
I think the interesting thing on Argentina is their two best players, Messi and DePaul. Yeah, you read these other players, and they're playing for Bundesliga, Premier League, everything else. Argentina's two best players play for Inter Miami in the MLS.
Well, when you go through it, only two countries have ever repeated, okay? Italy did it in 1934 and 38. And then 58 and 62 for Brazil. Messi's 38, and he's still the centerpiece. Yep. There's so many more superstars, younger stars mostly. Julian Alvarez played for Man City. Now he's at Atletico Madrid. Lautaro Martinez plays at Inter Milan. They're on the attack. In the midfield, they got Alexis McAllister, who plays for Liverpool. They have Rodrigo De Paul, who plays for Inter Miami, much like you said. Leonardo Paredes, Boca Juniors, which is the top team in Argentina. On defense, Cristiano Montero goes to Tottenham. Lisandro Martinez plays at Man United. Nicolas Otamendi, who's also 38, by the way, plays for Benfica. It's still going strong. They have no weaknesses. The weakness is that nobody repeats. Yeah. That's the biggest weakness. This team is very, very talented. Argentina is going to be a tough out for anybody in this tournament. Is there anyone you think can give them any battle between Algeria, Austria, or Jordan?
I don't think so.
Jordan's a debutant also, first time in the tournament. Yep. Austria can score. Austria is not bad. They can put the ball in the net. We can see how they play overall. That Austria-Algeria matchup should be very interesting to see who gets the second spot. Group K, Portugal, the Congo, DR Congo, the Republic of the Congo, Uzbekistan, another debutant in Colombia. Looks like Portugal and Colombia to me, unless you see something different, Kev.
Ronaldo's still playing. He's 41 years old, his last go of the World Cup. I doubt he plays at 45. What's interesting is when you look at the rankings, Portugal's only the 20th best defensive team in the World Cup. So that could be their weakness. Colombia, they've got a guy, the Luis Diaz from Bayern Munich, he's such a talented player. Wouldn't it be a total shock to see Colombia pull out this win in this group here? I mean, it's those two teams. I don't think Congo and Uzbekistan is going to give them much of a battle.
And then the final group, which to me is probably one of the best matchups for the overall top seed, is England, Croatia, Ghana, and Panama. And say what you want about Ghana, but they found a way to get by Nigeria and Cameroon, who are consistent. The Super Eagles are always in this, and then they got knocked out, much like Italy. These are the teams that you expect to see in the World Cup. England, Croatia, though, this should be one hell of a matchup to see who gets the top seed out of Group L.
Yeah, I really like England. Every year they expect them to, or every 4 years they expect them to make a run. They've disappointed every year, every cup, it seems like. You look at the stars, Saka and Rice, who both play for Arsenal, O'Reilly and Gil from Man City. So these are guys that played a lot this year. But it still revolves around Harry Kane. 56 games this year across all competitions with Bayern Munich. He scored 64 goals, so more than a goal a game. So they've got the firepower there. When you look at the roster and when you look at some of the criticisms, the coach Thomas Tuchel took a couple of guys and left off some players that they thought were going to be on the roster. So we'll see if he's got the right mix and the right makeup here for this roster to make a run. Croatia, they're going to try to send Luka Modric off to retirement on a nice run here too. This is likely his swan song. He's likely retiring after this tournament is over.
He's been great for a long time. You got Kovacic, you got Gvardiol. They have really nice players on this team. They have a lot of talent. Croatia is better than people think. England's the favorite, but I think Croatia can beat them. Those are our groups, guys. I mean, Is there, I know, very long, but we covered every team now. Is there anything that you're looking forward to? Where do you think the Americans go, Gino? What do you think? How far do you think they go?
32. I'm not sure they make it to 16.
And Kev?
I think they get to the 16 before losing.
I think they're going to get to the 8.
I
All
hope
right,
they
Gino,
do.
Tell us the odds of where we are with these bets.
U.S. to get to the quarterfinals would be plus 275 right now.
Looks like a bet I'm going to be making.
Yeah. I mean, yep. Odds for any of these teams? Who do you want on to win? Is there anyone? You're
Argentina. What are the defending champs odds?
To make it to the finals, plus 425. To win, plus 900.
France the favorite, Jay?
At the moment, Spain.
Really? Okay.
They've got
plus 450.
And France at 475 still?
France at plus 475, yeah.
Yep.
You know, the tournament is so big, Darren. You can get good odds specifically now. I mean, there's so many teams. Knockout round hasn't started yet. Brazil plus 400 to the finals, plus 950 to win.
Okay.
You know, you could even get plus odds to make it to the semis with any of these teams right now.
What would you say for Colombia to win Group K? What would the odds be? Is there anything we could do on that?
To win the group, Colombia plus 200.
I don't think it's bad. I think they might be better than Portugal. I know it's close. I'm just saying. Yeah. Trying to find the 2 seed that could beat the 1 seed. And I guess the last one I'll ask you is Mexico as the other host. I don't think Canada has a shot, but does Mexico have odds? What are their odds to get to the 8 and then to the finals?
Okay, Mexico. To get to the quarterfinals is plus 300.
Okay. So it's worse than the Americans. Americans were plus 275.
Correct.
Okay. Wow.
To win it, they're plus 6,500, just behind the U.S. at plus 6,000.
So even though Mexico's higher ranked, the U.S. has the better odds right now.
I think, you know, the U.S. bettors are going to bet the U.S.
Yeah, that's true. Let's put it that way.
I think the most interesting one, Belgium.
Yep.
You know, the favorites in Group G, minus 220 to win the group, but they're plus 4,000 to win the cup.
Yeah.
That's one that you look at of the other teams in there, you know, that's one that you say, you know, they're gonna win that group more than likely. I mean, they're the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th best odds to win their group.
Okay. They have the 10th best odds to win the whole thing.
Yeah.
So who's the long shot you think they can get to the semifinals? Was it 4 years ago? Was it Morocco that got to the semis that no one expected?
I mean, Morocco right now is 10-1.
Okay.
Belgium plus 500, Norway plus 550, Netherlands at plus 450. Do you like that?
I'm taking Colombia to get to the semifinal.
Colombia semifinals plus 700.
I like it. I like the kid in the middle. I think he could. I think he's a playmaker. I think they got a shot. So, any final thoughts on the World Cup, Kev or Gino? Anything else you guys want to wrap up with?
Obviously, with the way Darren and I talked about, especially. The two of us are really looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's fun. We're not going to be this in-depth anymore. It's just this one. But we'll cover U.S. games very closely every week, and we'll let you know what's going on and anything else interesting that we see. So you don't keep us in check from now from going forward.
I think I'll get into it a lot more as we get down to 32 or 16 teams. I think right now there's just going to be so many games, so many teams. You're going to have a lot of knockout games where some of these favorites are going to be playing games that aren't really going to, you know, we kind of know Spain is going to get in from the knockout round. They're going to be playing games that aren't really going to mean too much. But once we get past that, I do think I'll get into it once we get down to it. So,
well, listen,
I think when Gino sees the bracket, he'll get into it.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, once we get to,
I probably
you
will.
You know, elimination, you know, on the, you know, the next game you win and you're out. Yeah. It gets much more exciting. I agree with you. And the way they space it out, when they're playing the 12th, the 19th, and the 25th. So you can play three games basically over 2 weeks per each team. So it's a little tough.
Also, adding all of these teams, you really added a lot of teams now. You're going, there's going to be so many of these first round games to get to the knockout round. I mean, there's going to be so many games. We're not going to know what the hell's going on.
Well, that's the thing is that they've watered it down. So there's a lot of countries that are not of the caliber that should be in this tournament that are.
Yes.
But you know what? For them, it's the biggest thing in the world. It's the world sport. So that they you know, so they're all over it. But yeah, World Cup, me and Kev, Gino will be into it soon. Me and Kev will be into it from moment one.
And US Friday night.
Absolutely. US Friday night, 9 o'clock against Paraguay in Los Angeles. Any other points, boys, before we wrap up?
Go Knicks.
Go Knicks. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin here with Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world. The sports are wacky world where even we know what a foul is in the NBA. I'm just kidding. Nobody knows what a foul is in the NBA. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be a Spotify, Apple product, TuneIn, whatever you like. We're posting a lot on social. Please like, please share, please follow us. Please be part of the group. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.